Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the Dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. Hello and welcome to No Heathen Land. I hope you're really well, however that looks for you. Right at the top, I just wanted to say a big thank you for listening. The last episode, the Halloween episode with Ross, had the most listens of any episode so far. So I'm so grateful if you listened. And if you didn't, I'd love it if you went back and checked out some or all of my past episodes if you're feeling very generous. I have had some wonderful guests with really excellent stories to share, and I just love this little project that I've made for myself. So yeah, I'm so glad you're along for the ride if you are. So on with season 2, episode 2. My guest this episode is the brilliant Matthew Headley Stoppard, poet and fellow librarian, and yes, I do have an endless supply of librarians, so don't think I've run out just yet. Matthew is the official Otley Town poet and has published works A Family Behind Glass, Cinema Stories with James Nash, and in 2020 The Garland King, which I'm delighted that he reads from as part of this episode. So just before we get on with this episode, I wanted to alert anyone listening that whilst this episode is fairly upbeat, as always, some of the subject matter covered is sensitive and includes domestic violence and also a discussion of a pornographic deepfake experience, something that I never thought I'd say in this podcast, but here we are. So in reaction to the latter, Matt does mention in this episode that it is legal to make these deepfakes, but in the last few days, it's now been announced that sharing pornographic deepfakes is to be made illegal in England and Wales, so a small but very positive step in the right direction there, and you'll see how it relates to our chat within the episode. So I'll be back at the end with information on where to find more of what myself and Matthew discuss, as always. I really hope you enjoy.
Yes, thanks for having me, Sally. I feel very welcome in No Heathen Land, having listened to previous episodes. So yeah, I'm Matthew Headley Stoppard. I'm the official Otley Town poet, so that's like a proper sort of part-time job. Yeah. And I'm also a librarian. But 2 years ago, I released a book that took about 5 years to write that was mainly focused on rituals and traditions and customs and songs and just generally strange things that people do to keep heritage alive. Mm. And I was particularly interested in traditions and customs and things that people do where they don't know why they do it, and it's so old or it's so strange or it's evolved in such a way. Mm-hmm. And I started to think about that in a contemporary setting, and how if all the things that distract us now, all the things that have been forced upon us, like Brexit and the monarchy and capitalism and the patriarchy, if they weren't there, but these traditions were the only sort of cultural reference points, how would people talk, or how would sort of a man approaching middle age with two children write poetry? And the result was The Garland King, the book that was published sort of to, middle of COVID as well. So
and you've got a copyright in front of you.
Yeah, so I might read a poem from it.
I would love that.
But the, like, cause there's a, one thing in particular. I don't know if we're going to launch into this. But
just, let's just go for it. So,
okay.
So our subject today is...
Riding the Stang.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Riding the Stang is sort of a public punishment or retribution to, aimed at a, either a man or a woman if something went amiss in the household.
Okay.
It would be mainly the documented things I've found, it would be mainly aimed at the man, because he would be more inclined to beat his wife or do something awful to his wife. But similarly, if she henpecked him in speech marks, cheated on him, then they would also do that as well. So it would involve... I've got this book here that is available... reference only from Leeds Libraries, and it's called Old Time Punishments.
I'm upset that I've never looked at that before.
Yes.
So are you going to give a little bit of context about where this started? Is this?
Yeah. So in researching the book, I was sort of looking at just anything, like, and I came across Riding the Stang online.
Yeah.
It's also called the Skimmington Ride.
Okay.
Or the Skimmity Ride down south, but we're not interested in that, really.
Nope.
Not at all. So that's where I came across it. But again, it's one of these customs that's so old, no one knows how long it's been going on for.
Yeah.
And to conduct a riding of the Stang, it's like you can do it with anything, pretty much. So
okay.
it must be really old.
Mm-hmm.
And in punishments, in old-time punishments, it definitely mentions sort of an account from
okay.
the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And it describes it as the ancient custom of riding the Stang still lingers in some remote parts of the country. Holding delinquents up to ridicule was a favourite mode of punishment practised by our forefathers, and riding the Stang was the means generally employed for punishing husbands who beat their wives or allowed themselves to be henpecked, or if their conduct was deemed profligate. There are various designations for the custom. In Yorkshire, riding the Stang is the name used. In Scotland, the same term is applied. And then in the south, as I mentioned, the Skimmington riding. And it says it's also known on the continent.
Right. Forgive me for sounding daft, but what does Stang mean?
So Stang, I suppose if I was to read on a bit, the Stang is, it's a procession.
Oh, okay.
So people would hear about what had happened, and then they'd gather themselves together, and they'd either make an effigy of the husband or wife, or they would dress up a young lad as this person.
Wow.
They'd sometimes paint a black eye on that, on the person being the effigy or the representation of I don't know, the henpecked husband or wife beater or whoever. And I suppose, like, just the reason I'm interested in this, we kind of talked about this early in the day, but I don't believe in ghosts, but I sort of think, you know, like, walking in the footsteps of people who've come before us is the sort of ghostly thing or like, a thing that's always taking place.
I think you're right, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And I think there's something, especially, I know you grew up in Barnsley, sort of small mining towns.
Yeah.
I think there's something about really base behaviour. You're not sort of held accountable to much in a small town because the rules are so few and far between. So
yeah.
I think a good bit of like public disgrace sort of speaks to me.
okay.
I think there's something in me that I've inherited that sort of likes the idea of this, and I've got a few like theories on that as well.
Okay.
So yeah, in the book, the mode of carrying out the ceremony is as follows. A man having beaten his wife, the young men of the village assume the attitude of public censors, and arrangements are made for the riding of the stang in three nights in succession. A trumpeter blows his horn loud and long as day gives way to night and the villagers are brought together. A pole or ladder is procured and the most witty man in the village is placed thereon, mounted shoulder high and carried in great state through the streets. In one hand he has a large key or stick and in the other a dripping pan and leads the music of the crowd. Men, women and children join in the fun. And beat kettles, pans, pots, or anything else that will make a noise. Tin whistles, horns, and trumpets are blown,
yep.
And the noise produced being better imagined than described. As soon as all is ready, a start is made, and about every 50 yards the procession stops, and the mounted man proclaims at the top of his voice a rhyme suited to the nature of the offence. So there's different versions,
mm-hmm.
And there's a version for Upper Wharfdale, which is where I live.
Okay.
So a hey dilly dang, it's neither for thy part nor my part that I ride the stang, but it's for Jack Solomon, his wife he does bang. He banged her indeed, he banged poor woman, though she stood him na need, and neither took stick, wire nor stour, but up wi' a besom and knocked her o'er. And it ends with a hip, 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 hurrah.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
So, before this procession, I don't know if there are any examples or if you can imagine, or we could just make it up. How do you think that this would be known? I mean, would it just be because it's probably a very small place and everyone knows everyone's business? So, like, so-and-so walks out of the house looking a bit, like... forlorn, maybe she's looking a little bit injured.
Yes.
And then everyone sort of rallies together to shame the person.
Yeah, I think it's that. Or maybe it's like it's so small and the house, you know, like if you think like in the 1700s what a person's house might
look
like.
Well, yeah, you could probably just hear it.
You could see it and hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
And there'd be so little to do, you know,
yeah,
in those times.
It's like a jolly... I mean, the kids are joining in.
Yeah,
like a jolly little outing.
The fun. So, yeah, and I think, like, processional things, we still like doing it. And and just before, like, we met to do this, I just Googled it quickly. Mm-hmm. And in Dorset recently, I know it's not connected to Yorkshire, but...
I'll forgive it this once.
I'm sorry. but someone did the skimmity ride because a town planner got something wrong. So they were sort of publicly shaming this.
Oh, that's quite fun.
That was this year. So,
wow.
And that made like the local news. So yeah, I wrote a poem, and maybe this bit might get political, but.
Yeah, go for it. I don't represent anyone.
Okay. I think, like, in terms of the patriarchy, we need a bit of riding the stang.
Mm.
And as a parent of two boys as well, I sort of worry about the sort of behaviour they might see or pick up. Mm. And also, a friend of mine and a really good poet, really famous poet, Helen Moore, she got like deep faked. So I'd like to read a bit of Helen's poetry as well, because I think it taps into this.
Mm.
And then we there was a documentary recently about it, and the people who make this deep fake pornography have no shame, and they sort of call it, they call them commissions and things like this.
Wow.
So it's kind of a romantic notion that riding the Stang or something like that would solve all these problems. Mm. But I also like the fact that there was a time where the community got together and sort of went, do you know what, this isn't on, mm. and we'd like to publicly shame you.
Okay.
And this is the only way we know how to do it.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll read the poem. This is the most boring bit. I should have had it prepared.
That's okay.
And then I might read a bit about Helen's experiences as well.
Yeah,
I wish she was here to read it herself. I guess. Mm. So I took as the epigraph a section of the song that whoever's on the Stang sings. So here we come with a randan dang. It's not for you nor for me we ride this Stang, but for Gooseberry Bob, whose wife he did bang. Ladles, pounds, saucepans, like mum being throttled against the wall between your bedroom and hers. To keep the rabble at bay, you tear out those rain-wrinkled images first found behind quicksave, arthritic pang of a reader's wife reclining, stockings sagging, same bobbed hair as your nan. You tear out the guts of those VHS tapes from your teens and hang them from a street lamp, hoping this makeshift maypole of black ribbon distracts the mob approaching. Now you're Gooseberry Bob, never raised a fist like he did, but these are girls locked in your scream. Ale to dilute tears, sinking pints and pool balls. One day you'll be manly enough to wear overalls. Here they come, rolling pins beating baking trays, animal clamour, the letterbox rattling like a bad case of nerves. I was just trying to recreate it in a contemporary setting.
I love that, it made me feel a bit teary.
Yes, I'm sorry, this is quite a sombre No Heathen Land, isn't it?
They're all pretty. I just have a real problem with like being serious. So.
Yes.
But that's great. Well done.
Thank you.
For writing that.
Yeah. So I was just trying to sort of pick apart like patriarchal things, and I just think it'd be a real spectacle if like some of the people who proliferate like the patriarchy or patriarchal behaviour, if we could all just get a big bit of wood and bang some saucepans and just sort of say this is wrong.
Yeah.
And also, I'm not going to read from this, but I was just fact checking it.
Okay.
It does feature in the Mayor of Casterbridge as well.
Oh yeah, I think you mentioned that. Yes.
Yeah.
Which I have read, but in maybe 2005, so
yes.
I can't really remember it. It's probably at the back of my bookshelf somewhere with all my university books.
Well, I mean, at least you read it. I haven't, but I found the bit where it features. It's not like a massive part of the storyline, but I'm not going to read it because I'll be tempted to put on like a fake West Country accent as well.
Oh, we don't want that.
No, we definitely don't want that. And that is like what I've been interested in. Maybe the closest thing that relates to it in Yorkshire that still takes place now is the Burning Bartle in West Witten, which is like a pre-Guy Fawkes burning that happens in August.
Okay.
And my friend Lucy went to it recently. I've not been to it, but definitely a processional where people stop and say something, have a couple of drinks and sort of get a bit rowdy.
So what is the significance behind that? Do you know or not?
I'm not sure because it is one of those things where no one really knows why it started. And it might connect, some of these things connect to the restoration.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, but it's definitely pre-bonfire night.
Wow.
I think that's covered, I think, the ride in the Stang.
Yeah, I love it. That's so interesting. It's so different to what we usually talk about on the podcast, but that's great because looking to do like different things, and sometimes things don't have to be about ghosts and witches.
Yeah.
But it all ties together, doesn't it? It's all like, it's all in this, everything ties together in this weird sort of heritage, like folklore sort of strand, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it comes from like a sort of brutal, more, like more brutal, dirtier time where, I, you know, when you see like a period drama,
yeah,
like a Thomas Hardy one, and everyone's got sort of immaculate smocks and things like that.
It drives me mad. Like, you know that everyone was filthy.
Yes. And I just think, I think we sort of have inherited that. Like, maybe we're not as, you know, lewd and base as we probably were. But, you know, like if we were to organise a ride in the Stang now, there'd be like a WhatsApp group.
A risk assessment.
People would be like, oh, well, you know, I was the chairman of the Riding the Stang committee, and but I think people would be so keen to do something like that and just do it for a laugh, but also do it for the old time punishment.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Do you want to share Helen's?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a sequence.
Okay.
And it's really harrowing, like, you know, like, I should point that out, because whoever did this, they took all her social media pictures,
mm-hmm.
and then they, and someone commissioned someone to do this. So I hate the fact that the people call it a commission, you know, in terms of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of paid someone to do it in, you know, in that sort of male way where they think they can own everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just read the last bit, because maybe it's sort of, it feels more hopeful, because deep faking's not illegal. Like, it didn't. Helen started a campaign and things, but I still don't think it's illegal.
What is the piece called?
The sequence is called Deep Fake, a Pornographic Ekphrastic. And I'm going to read part 7,
mm-hmm.
Last online one day ago. Outside it snows, and snow reclaims the lawn. Day reclaims sky, sky reclaims dawn. Here is Helen walking to her son's nursery. Here is Helen on her first anniversary. Then comes the evening, talking its cue. The sound of history forgetting you. But yeah, I don't want to sort of... Everyone should just go out and read The Illustrated Woman.
Definitely. So I always link everything, all my sources and everything. So your book will be linked, Helen's book will be linked, and I'll say what you read out and all that kind of stuff, so people can really easily find everything out about you both.
Great, yeah. Oh, and old time punishments as well, if people want to look up.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put that in too.
There's some other interesting things in here. The ducking stool.
I know about that one. Yeah. That's in witchcraft stuff, definitely, is the ducking stool. I'm sure there's a fun poem, in inverted commas, poem about the ducking stool. I've spoken about it so many times. There's the Ghost Stories and Other Weird Experiences compilation book here in Leeds Central Library.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a ducking stool poem in there from a newspaper article somewhere. I'm going to look that up.
Yes.
I'm sure there is.
I mean, it's not great for a podcast, but there's some interesting like pictures of different types of
ducks. Well, I can take some images. When I was in Bruges a few years ago, I went to the Torture Museum.
Nice.
Yeah. and that showed a lot of these kind of like punishments, public punishments. Like,
yeah.
It was quite brutal.
Ugh.
Yeah, interesting though. Like some of the waxworks were absolutely hilarious.
Oh right, okay.
It was quite old, and they're just not really updated anything. But all the information is still right. So you know they had like the big barrels that people would wear, like the big clamps that they'd put on women's faces so they couldn't speak.
Oh God.
This is. I mean, this is like medieval punishment. This isn't recent, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Like big, sort of like coffin style, like sort of like wooden, like caskets, I guess, for want of a better word, with nails in. You know, like on Matilda when they put her in the turkey.
Oh yeah.
Just like that. Yeah. So.
Goodness.
I mean, riding the stag might have been in there somewhere.
Yes.
This was a few years ago, so if I read it, I don't remember. But I guess it's not... Well, I guess it's a kind of form of torture. It's a punishment, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think people would have considered those punishments rather than torture at the time as well.
I think... Well, that's what I like about, like, folk customs as well, because it's sort of a shared thing across the world. You'll see a version of, like, everything that someone does in, like, South America. Mm-hmm. You'll see it happening... Like the Ukraine, for example, we've just seen a Ukrainian film, but like wearing straw as costume is definitely like a universal thing.
Yeah.
And I love that idea, you know, like especially in times where we're being divided so much by different topics. Mm. I like that someone from, I don't know, Eastern Europe can look at someone in South America and that they look pretty much the same.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's what I partly as well why I wanted to sort of get immersed in the folk customs and traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how would you feel about leading a stag?
I'd love to. So when I had sort of grand ideas for the launch of this book.
Yeah.
So it was that little gap in 2020 where things were starting to happen again.
Yeah.
So the launch was going to have an instrumental group, Spafford and Campbell, who are really good, and they've just got an album out. So they're like a folk duo, fiddle and guitar. Mm. A singer, Steph Ladowski, who's just a phenomenal unaccompanied folk singer. A Morris dancing side, one of the local sides to Otley. And then my plan was to put a saucepan under everyone's chair and a wooden spoon.
Yeah.
And then at the end I would be carried out on a stang. And like I was gearing up to do that, and then they kept putting the date back for the launch, and then the launch didn't happen till a year later. And I sort of got caught up in, because it was so difficult to get people to go for lots of reasons. They might not even like my poetry or whatever, but I think people are a bit nervous about going back into venues and stuff.
Yeah.
That I got caught up in that. But the plan was to... I wanted to be on the stang.
What about having an anniversary relaunch? Or similar, something. Your next birthday?
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Birthday stang.
Yeah. A stang do.
That's what I was just... Oh, yeah. I was just gonna say. Great work.
I love that.
Yeah, your next birthday is Matthew's stang do.
Stang do. Right, we're going to make that happen.
Yeah.
We need to get a lot of saucepans, I think.
That's doable, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was very, very interesting. And I want everyone to read your poetry and, find out more about these sort of... Not lost, but maybe dwindling book customs.
Yeah, it feels like some are dwindling and then some are sort of really popular.
Yeah.
I think like the work that maybe Boss Morris do, in they're based in sort of Stroud and Bristol, they've definitely made Morris dancing cool.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe the more sort of localised stuff is, but there's tons of it in Yorkshire. I mean, Yorkshire's great for that.
Well, we've got such funny little towns and villages that I think it'd be hard not to be a little bit odd.
Yes. And because it's such a big, like if you were to conglomerate the sort of four Yorkshires, it's such a big area that takes in the coast, and you've got all the weird sort of coastal things as well.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
So at the end of each episode, I usually ask if there's anything that you've been enjoying or watching or reading or experiencing that you'd like to share, and I can share something too if you like.
Well, I think we could share together that we've just watched an
literally
amazing
just
we've watched Pamphir, I think that's how it's pronounced. So it's like a Ukrainian revenge sort of thriller type, but with a folk horror twist, or maybe not horror, but
maybe not horror, but thriller, kind of dark, and the whole atmosphere of it was quite like dingy, wasn't it?
Yeah, but especially there was like a carnival at the end.
Yeah.
And I think you were saying as we were leaving, it's sort of carnivals create confusion and sort of a weird closeness that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because obviously, usually whenever that happens in a film, it's the masks as well, isn't it? So you can't see who's there. And usually it's because someone's looking for someone, or they realise that they don't know who anyone is because they're wearing masks.
Yes.
And that's creepy, isn't it?
It's very creepy. And it was sort of at the crescendo of all the things that were happening in the film.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and there was sort of like only a, because it was sort of like technically an art house sort of indie film, and there were moments in it that were wonderful that you just wouldn't get in a mainstream film.
Yeah. So I think I would recommend people watch it if they can.
Yes.
It is part of the Leeds International Film Festival.
Yeah.
That Matt spotted, and I'm glad that he did. I probably would never have got through the programme, do one page and be like, it's too much. It's too overwhelming. Because they show so much.
Yeah. It stood out though, because the image was.
A cool image, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's how the image is how the film started, which I really loved. Straight into it.
Yeah.
Started and ended. Oh, yeah, actually, exactly how it started and ended. The end, the shot was really cool.
Yeah, you're right. It's sort of punctuated with the sort of folk costume, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
And the other thing I've enjoyed, I'm going to make it's kind of topical. They've reissued an album called Frost and Fire by the Watersons, who are a great, they're from Hull, the great sort of folk revivalist group. And if you've not heard Frost and Fire before, it's a really great album because they sing songs that you do at specific times of the year. So there's like a Christmas section, there's like a there's a soul a Lancashire soul in song.
Mm-hmm.
The Derby Tups on there, which is one of my favourite songs because I was born in Derbyshire. But you'd sing that when you're doing a mum in play at Christmas.
Okay.
But the vocal harmonies, so the a brother, two sisters, and their cousin, and they sing unaccompanied. But it was sort of during the revival in the early 60s,
mm-hmm.
and these sort of vocal groups, them and the Young Tradition, that sort of sang with like so much vigour and youth, and they took what like the toothless older song bearers had,
mm-hmm.
and they just sort of catapulted it back into the public, and so Frost and Fire has been reissued, so I'd recommend you go out and buy it.
Okay, I'm definitely gonna look into that. Yeah, I love unaccompanied harmonies.
Yeah, oh, they're the best, like just
amazing,
unbelievable. Yeah.
Right, what have I, well, mine are a lot less sophisticated than yours. I went to go see Halloween Ends at the cinema.
Nice, it's classic, isn't it, Halloween?
It was quite bad. I went with a couple of friends, and at the end we were sort of like, was it good? I don't think it was. But it did end, so I'm interested to hear other people's opinions on it, if anyone wants to let me know.
Is it definitely the last one?
Well, at the end I did kind of say, when's Halloween End 2 going to happen? But it did end.
All right, okay.
But I mean, it's ended so many times. It was kind of, I just found it a little, I don't know what I wanted, but I don't know if that was it. There was like a weird storyline that was running through it that seemed kind of pointless.
Mm.
And then it did sort of finish. It's a little bit unsatisfying. And if you like horror, like traditional horror movies, I guess, like slashers, it's not even, there's not even like that many creative kills in it. So like, you know, you'd want something really ridiculous, but there's not that many good ones. So
that's a shame.
Yeah, but I like going to the cinema and it's fun. And my friend's husband was very sweet and like brought everyone little snacks. So it was lovely.
on to theme, like little pumpkin snacks? Or?
No, not little pumpkin snacks. We do have some Rolos.
Okay.
Which I've not had for about like 15 years, so that was very exciting.
Yeah.
And also some like the sherbet thing, but I don't like sherbet, so I just gave mine to my friend.
All right.
But it was very, very kind. So that kind of made it as well.
Yeah,
it's a fun experience. Going to the cinema to see like something like that is quite fun. And then the other thing was I went to a gig last night, which was great. It's a band that I really love called Conjurer, and they're like a super heavy metal band from Rugby, I think they're from, and
right.
They're just really great. And I was been in a bit of a mood all week, so like it really blasted it out of me. It's like teeth rattling metal.
Oh, wow.
So that was great. So if you're into like super heavy metal, like doom metal, and you don't know Conjurer, you definitely should and listen to them.
Nice. Is it sort of like witch themed then with a name like Conjurer?
No, it isn't. I mean, I guess their songs are kind of themed around. I think they're just like super metal. but they do like some of their song titles and some of their lyrics, I guess a little bit dark, maybe a little bit like darkly spiritual, I suppose. That's the only way I could sort of think of it.
Yeah,
so they have tracks like, they have an album called The Maya, and they have songs like called like Basilisk, and yeah, they're just really cool. You wouldn't like them if you don't like heavy metal, but I do, so I think it's they're a fun band, and I'm glad I got to see them again because they're just so good and so loud.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's just what you need.
Very nice.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll end there. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No, a pleasure. Thanks, Sally.
Okay. Bye bye.
Hello, back again. I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did. Links to everything we discussed in this episode will be in the description, as ever. And I really, really urge you to go buy and read Matthew's poetry. It's really excellent. He's represented by Valley Press, and all Matt's links are, of course, in the description. Same goes for Helen Mort. Again, buy, read, support, please. I'll be back next month for the next episode, before the new year, with repeat guest Josh Flint. An episode I'm very much looking forward to, as we're going to go on a little day trip to set the scene for this 15th century epic. So I'll leave you hanging with that. So once again, thank you so much for listening. Take good care. Goodbye.